Knock, knock.
Oh, Patrick?
I am here.
Great. This is Morgan.
At last.
How are you?
Cool, yes. Thanks. Good. Great. Thanks, Morgan.
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh, Howard. How are you?
Howard.
Sorry I'm late. Hello, Patrick.
No. I think Howard and I are on time. I think you're early, Patrick.
Let's be backing first.
Yeah, this is our sound check, so welcome. Welcome to the sound check.
Thank you, Dougie.
Do I sound a bit raspy to you guys?
No.
Ah, good, good. I lost 6 hours of work on computer, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs every obscenity that I could think of. So
that lovely machine that is supposed to make our life easier.
Jesus Christ.
Well, it's just, it gets our hopes up, you know.
We're talking about women, yes? No.
Oh, look at that.
Patrick Willis, known online as Snordster, is a South African native, voice actor by trade, and seeker of truth and tranquility in his personal life. He now enjoys the peace of simple living, using his silk radio voice to publish his and his friends' reflections on life on YouTube and alternative platforms. He's lived and continues to live a very interesting life, which you will learn about in our conversation with him. Check out the show notes for his work and enjoy.
Patrick, Prachie Afrikaans?
Ja, ek praat baie goeie Afrikaans.
Cool.
You have to do that in this country. I speak Zulu fluently, as well as I speak English. I learned to speak Zulu before I spoke English. The kids were given to the gardening chappie. He strapped us on his back. His name was Boyum Tembu. And he taught us how to speak Zulu. And that's how we spoke to our parents for the first probably year before they said, do not do that any longer.
All right.
Because they hadn't got a clue what the fuck I was talking about anyway. So.
Oh, that's brilliant. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll find a lot of people, especially black people, they know 6-7 languages fluently. It's quite astounding that they can slip into Zulu, Xhosa, Afrikaans, English, Shona, Shangaan. It's depends where they are, and they just break out into the language. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
wow.
Incredible. I know a couple of guys from Congo. Same thing. I think they've got like maybe 300 different languages or thereabouts. And again, they can slip into 5 or 6 languages. I struggle with fucking English.
Yes.
In and of itself. So it amazes me. We here in Ireland, we don't speak our native language. So I think that may be what actually cripples us to begin with, is not having the language we're supposed to speak. And then we struggle to express ourselves properly through the medium of English, you know?
Yeah. And the trauma that is induced in schooling of, you know, it's just not taught right, our Gaelic.
Oh, yeah.
And it just does something to us, because I don't know any Irish people who have a second language. That's well, except for my sister, actually. She went and taught English in Spain. But yeah, that's about it. Like,
The oddest thing is that a large part of my family is from Armagh.
Oh.
And in those days, when I first went up north there, the guys used to enjoy sending suitcases down to London, and of course Gaelic was the only language spoken if there was anything near a telephone or a possible bug. Mm-hmm. So it was completely and utterly fascinating for me. I had no idea what the fuck they were saying most of the time, and they would just give it to me in sign language, which was even twice as confusing. But I ran afoul of them when one of them, this is a direct family, asked me if I wouldn't mind taking his suitcase to London when I went down. And I said, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And that was it. And it was a long time before anybody ever contacted me again from that side of the family.
Oh, man.
Christ.
Yeah, we're probably distantly related to Patrick.
Yeah,
that's my hometown as well.
Oh, cool. So, yes, I spent about 6 weeks up there. I was supposed to spend 3 months, but the suitcase story got me ejected quite quickly. yeah, it's a fabulous part of the world. Fabulous.
How long ago was this, Patrick? What decade are we talking about?
1972.
Yep, that's about right.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, it's a very different island these days. Yeah, so we've been interested to get you on or talk to you. You kind of slipped out of my consciousness. I became aware of you a couple of years ago. Jesus, maybe 10 years ago now at this stage. Just through accident, just through a YouTube video. And this voice just emerges out of the darkness. And captivating, to say the least. And then the subject matter. I think the first video, I think the one it actually was I don't know how many you've done, so you probably can't even fucking remember. But it was Fuck the Pope. And fuck all popes.
Yeah.
And just from there. But initially, it was the voice. Just this incredible voice that brings words to life or gives them a new life. Then mixed with the video and the music. And then the actual content. And so I listened to a lot of your videos. Then I think like anybody who is into any sort of, I don't even know how to describe it, but let's call it truther material or alternative material or anarchist material, whatever name you want to fucking give it. I got jaded. I got tired of the whole scene. I got worn out. And I kind of picked up the torch again, given the times we live in. And you came back into my consciousness again. And I know Howard's aware of your work as well. From what I read on the internet, you'd kind of gone quiet as well yourself. I don't know if you just decided, okay, what the fuck am I actually doing here? Is this the best use of my time? And the last video I listened to, it was essentially a call out from you that when the revolution begins, give me a shout.
That's about where it was at. That's what made me say fuck it, I'm bored with this shit. I'm a voice artist by trade. That's how I make my living, and I do the other word is prostitute.
Okay,
because I'll do anything.
We're all prostitutes
in some sense. I guess so. I hate the medical industry, but offer me 2,000 quid and I'll fucking do anything for them, anything on air. Anyway, I'm a prostitute by trade. So the voice I've had going for me for a while. I was in the commercials industry as a behind the desk chap for a long while, and I got to. I'm an extraordinarily lazy person, so I was trying to figure out the most lucrative way I could get through life to make the most money with the least amount of effort. And this, I settled on this, trained up a little more and did the voice stuff. And I used to hear the news that was so utterly boring and dry. So I decided to go the alternative way, but add a little bit of music to it to see how it would work in 2005 or six. And I expected to get 10 views and I had 50, and I just went on from there, and everyone said that's fantastic, put the music louder. I have no idea how that went, but then fuck the Pope and this horrendous stuff coming, and eventually I just ran. I think about 350 videos I put out there, but I got thrown off of YouTube when I had about 220 videos. They threw me off and lost all that material.
I was gonna ask. She's I've been similar places.
Had your videos been monetized prior to them?
I refuse that. No ways. I will not monetize. I'm not interested in their fucking money. Notice. I'd rather starve.
Okay, cool. And there's no way that material can't be recovered. I suppose it's probably their property. It's got to be in their terms and conditions, isn't it? That if it's on YouTube, it's essentially
probably there were a number of people who have recorded it, and I've got some of it back, but not a lot of it. Probably half of it.
Okay, that's a real fucking pity. Yeah, so what I wanted to ask, you said there you're somewhat of a prostitute. So, and I think in many ways we all are. We probably just wouldn't be so forthright in admitting it. But I wanted to discover, like, is where is the real kind of Patrick's voice? Or is a part of what you will read, does that have to resonate with you? Do you have to find some level of truth in it or meaning? Or is it simply a case of, listen, Patrick, I want you to read this. You know, I know you've alluded to it, but here's the $2,000. So I'm trying to figure out where does Patrick begin and end and snorts there, if that makes sense.
Commercials, television, radio and live. Okay. That's sports promos. I became the rugby voice for years and years. Tomorrow night, Natal plays that shit. You know, it's okay. Promos, just promos right. Upon okay. Promos. And they would pay me a decent amount of money. I mean, there was a stage in my life where I'd say to my wife, what the fuck is going on? Who put this money in my account? All right. I've spent my whole life going, who stole my money? And now... Money was pouring in, so I stuck to it, and that's what I did. Commercial voice work, voice books, anything that will get me a buck, and I don't have to get up and drive on the traffic to get through to anywhere. Just do it from. I'm lazy.
Okay. I can admit that too. I'm not as lazy as I used to be, but that's primarily down to the fact that I have lots of fucking children, so. I can't afford to be lazy or as lazy as I would like to be. So hopefully they'll all earn lots of money when I'm old. That's my plan, is when I'm a fucking
yes,
really
good
old
plan.
Man, that they'll look after me. But I, knowing me, they're all going to fuck off as soon as they hit 18. That's if they can.
Yeah.
Anywhere. But yeah, I hope and pray, you know. Yeah, so then all your YouTube work, that's your kind of your serious work. Would I be safe to say that? That's
yeah.
Sacrosanct. That's sacred for you.
I was very lucky to have met up with Les Visible in the early 2000s.
Ah.
And Les Visible stuff really turned me on. So I started with Les Visible and I. We would chat and he would write stuff for my voice and we would get together and put these weird things together. Fuck the Pope was one of them. Uh-huh. And yes, he galvanized me and put me into the headspace of... it is not just the news. I started off doing just boring news, uh-huh. Usually about Israel. But Les Visible turned me on to a way of dialogue that only he can produce.
Oh, yeah. A strange genius, that guy.
Yep. Yep. Merely normal Les, we call him.
Okay. So I was looking... again, a little bit into your background, and I saw that you worked for the 101st Battalion of the Southwest African Territorial Force. I open it up old wounds here.
No. We didn't know any better in those days. We thought the fucking communists were about to kill us all. Reds under our beds. You thought the Yanks suffered from that shit. We were worse than them by far.
Wow, really? Yeah, because it's strange. Because I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, you're South African. From an Irish perspective, as a kid when I was growing up, the only time we learned anything about South Africa was at the end of apartheid. We didn't really hear of it before that, so we were convinced that I'm talking about me, but I wouldn't have been in isolation, that white South Africans are essentially evil. Every one mm-hmm. of them was racist. And that's about as far as the conversation went. So again, I wanted to have a chat with you about what it's actually like to live in that kind of society with apartheid. I know everything's fucking changed from what I read now, where land is being, I don't know if confiscated is the right word, from African farmers in South Africa. It's completely switched on its head. I don't think that's going to be confined to South Africa. I don't think it is confined to South Africa. We see the same.
Not at all.
Yeah. We've seen the same kind of agenda getting rolled out in the States and this kind of victim culture. And I could see it happening across a lot of different countries. So I'm wondering if, I don't know if your background is, if you come from a farming background, if your ancestors are farmers, or maybe you can just tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Well, no, no. My father was a jazz musician, and we grew up in cities, and Durban was the original. And then we moved up to Johannesburg, and the two different countries really back then. But the country itself back then was, it was run fabulously well. We had an extraordinarily well-oiled machine running this place like you have no idea. We had one of the most extraordinary GDPs for any African country back then. We had, well, we didn't have to spend money on the darkies. That was the thing. And so three quarters of the population just got sidelined. And I was a very much of a liberal back then after I came out of the army. And the end of the of that era was delightful to us. Now I think three quarters of the people have turned just not racist, but they've turned around completely again. People are saying, well, that's bullshit. You can't have BEE, which is a form of black only employment. You can't, it's just it's what the Israelis did into the Middle East. They walked into the Middle East and they're kicking the shit out of Syria. What happened to this shall never happen again. To whom? To them, but they're going to make it happen to everyone else. It's exactly what's happened in this country. The guys, the guys that were the liberals back then are treated just as badly as the out and out racists. The racism has become reverse racism, if there is such a thing. It's hectic to involve yourself, which is why I live on a farm. Keep the fuck away from all of these crazy people. I don't watch the news. I don't involve myself in the system at all. Nothing. I refuse to be even consider any government my government.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. I've done that for God knows how long. Just in relation to the media, it's almost panic-inducing to watch it and listen to it on any regular basis, you know. And what kind of forced me back into looking at South Africa was, of course, we're going to be talking to yourself. And I listened to a couple of news interviews about South African farmers where their land had been taken from them. But I found it quite bizarre because what seems to be happening, at least from what I did watch, was that they're not actually giving land to black farmers. It's the government gives them a 30-year lease. And then because they don't have title to the land, they can't actually go to the bank to get any sort of capital.
Always a catch.
Yeah, to invest in it. They've no skills as farmers. So it seems incumbent on white farmers to train and upskill these guys. And then how they get capital from banks, which is also another fucking trap for them. I'm sure if they go and, you know, get loans from the banks, well, then they're probably not going to be able to pay those loans back. And then the land becomes property of the banks. So it seems like a bit of a shit show. And so in South Africa, for white farmers, is there a rebellion? Is there chances of rebellion, or have people just said, look, like yourself, fuck it. I want nothing to do with this. I'm retreating onto my own piece of land, and if somebody comes to take it, well, then we'll deal with that as it arises.
Yeah, there are the paranoid camps. There are the people who are well-armed, well-prepared guerrillas in the mist, training in strange places in the hills, obviously being serious preppers for years, and they expect this, what they call the swart gevaar, which is the black danger.
Okay.
And they expect it to happen, and they prepared for it. But in truth, the general consensus amongst those who are keeping a vague idea on more than just the news, there's going to be nothing of the sort in this place. They're too fucking unorganized. Everybody, not just the crazy right wingers on both sides of the divide. Everybody is just too fucking lazy, just like me. They want to get into government. And there was a fantastic line about 3 years ago whereby it was caught on a hot mic where one of the ANC National Executive Committee guys was arguing the toss about this very issue, the farms, about getting a farm. He wanted a farm. He already had about two or three. I won't give you his name on now because he's about to get expelled from the ANC and I don't know how much shit I can get into. But his name is Ace Magashule. Ah, fuck it. Sorry. I didn't mean that. He's his words to the National Executive Committee, which is 66 people, so it's a pretty large representation of the 13 different languages spoken, except white, in this country. And he said, he doesn't care. It is our turn to eat.
All right.
And it was a shocking thing to come out of that hot mic, because everybody knew it, but nobody had ever said it out loud. And that caused quite a furore. But again, it was forgotten in 2-3 months. Some people like me will repeat it occasionally. But the truth is, I was having an argument with I always rave on to a friend of mine, an American friend of mine that lives not terribly far from me, about what a fuck up the Yanks have become. Mm-hmm. And he turned around and said to me, you're right. And that's why South Africa is the best place in the world to live. Why? Because the government doesn't give a fuck. You can do whatever you like, this guy. They don't give a shit. They don't interfere. They say they're going to interfere, but they never really do. They say they're going to do these dastardly deeds and acts, but they never really do. You can bribe them if you've been speeding down the road drunk. Give them $100. You're fine. It's a fucking brilliant country to live in.
Patrick, may I ask you, we do hear stories of terrible things happening to white farmers, violent repossession, let's say, as they might call it. Do you have reason to live in fear yourself, being in the countryside? Or is this just going on in a different part of South Africa? Because we're more or less ignorant of all of this over here.
No, there's a very, very large proportion of this public is probably upwards of 70% who are dirt poor. And there's you know, guys with nothing to lose, and they become dangerous. And robberies, house robberies in the Western Cape, which is where I am, are rife. They happen all the time. But few happen with such violence as they do up in the north of this country, the Johannesburg, Pretoria, the further up north, all the way up to the border. The violence that does come with a house breaking or a house invasion is sometimes very hectic. So we do hear those stories on occasion. It's a difficult thing to nail down, because a lot of people are terrified, and they latch onto a story and embellish it a little bit, maybe. It's a difficult one to pin down. I'm not so sure that the number of white farmers being attacked, killed, maimed, tortured is as high as certain part of the population claim it to be. Okay. The government say there's none of that. So somewhere in between lies the truth. And I think the black farmers are getting attacked and robbed and beaten just as much as the white farmers.
Yeah, why not? I guess that's the way it works.
Segregate, I don't think, does it? It doesn't matter whose money you're fucking stealing, if they're black or white. If you're going to steal, you're going to steal it, ain't you? That's the way it works. Going back to your time in the armed forces, am I right in thinking that your unit was an integrated unit? Is that correct, or did I get faulty information?
Yeah, we went down to Namibia to teach the Namibian army, because we needed to worry about the Portuguese who were coming through Namibia at the time. So we went to go and teach them how to track for us. And truth be told, they were fucking useless and they stole everything. It was just a complete waste of time. So in trying to teach them, we ended up knowing the territory very well ourselves. And we just thought, fuck, let's let us do it. We got a couple of bushmen who were brilliant, and we brought them up from the south, and they can track a fucking dove in the middle of the night. They are brilliant. They're amazing. And we used them largely as the hands and feet on the ground, and we were largely strike forces. So they would go in for us. We'd come in directly behind them when we got the info. So that's what we did. And yet we went down there as lazy. So we thought, geez, fabulous. Namibia, We're going to hang around the beaches and do fuck all for this, or 9 or 10 months. What a fabulous thing. And it turned out to be a heavy move. The 101 battalion became a pretty hardcore bunch. And in fact, it ended up being a battalion. It wasn't a battalion. It was a ragtag bunch of us, normally from the Durban area. We went around there. We just, for the first 3 or 4 months, we just sat around smoking dope and drinking beer, and then realized that these guys who were training had no clue, none, not a single clue. And because we all, our kit was going, our beers were being stolen. That was very bad news. And so we eventually, as I say, we went and we did it ourselves, and became a legendary group of people.
Because we've myself and Harold, we had the beginnings of a conversation recently about the kind of pros and cons of men being involved in the armed forces, or really around conscription. So what's your thought? Would you have been the same man if you hadn't been involved in the armed forces, or do you?
No way.
No.
No, I was a freaking smelly hippie from Durban, and when I left there, I had a different mindset entirely. A live contact does a thing to a human being that is you could never explain to anybody. You've had to experience it yourself. Live contact brings you into the now. It brings you into your seeing who you are as a human being. So it changed me completely.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. We were running some thought experiments around trying to put yourself into the position of, say, a Nazi guard in a death camp. I think most people think, well, Jesus Christ, I could never do that. I think most people think I could never actually harm or kill another human being. But I think when you give it any real level of thought, it's within every single fucking one of us on the planet. But very few of us actually have to face that reality. I think most men now will probably never even be involved in a physical altercation. And I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing. But I think if we completely pass over it, we're missing a fundamental part of our nature. And we tend to shy away from it. Or even with the talk of toxic masculinity these days, I'm almost of the mind that many masculine pursuits will eventually be outlawed. So I don't know, maybe we'll have all female armed forces in the future, but it seems to be going in a very fucking strange direction, and there seems to be an attack on masculinity. I don't know if that's something that's happening in South Africa. I don't know if it's something you've noticed over the years. I think I'm 45, Howard's 34. I think you maybe a slight bit older than both of us. So I'm just wondering, in your age group and your part of the world, have you seen any sort of attack on what's traditionally been classified as manliness?
In this country, it's less prevalent than out there. The universities are trying it on occasionally, but the darkies tell them to fuck right off and just to, you know, they it's one thing about. They are traditional Xhosas or traditional Zulus who have a culture that is very strict. Okay. And that kind of shit doesn't even just, it doesn't float. It just gets flushed instantaneously. So they don't even really try it very hard. So no, it's a harder bunch of people here because of the conflict. Mm. And people are more realist when they are confronted with either racism, or they're confronted with bullshit, and people will rather speak out than shut up. So it's a pretty hardcore attitude to have. But if you put it against what's going on in the States specifically, and all of these male crushing initiatives that they've initiated over there, and have been for several years. I just look over there and I just think, oh, I'm really sorry for those guys. They've those guys that fought in Vietnam, and I knew a few of them, tough boys, and now they've become a bunch of pansies.
Yeah, it's a rough one. It's terrifying how quick it can all fucking change as well. It's really, really horrifying how quick a culture can change. We've seen it happen here probably three or four times in the last maybe 20 years alone, we've seen mm-hmm. massive changes. Now we're in the age of coronavirus. So Howard was telling me they've just lifted the lockdown over there for you guys. So you've managed to get back to the pub. Is that correct?
Very importantly for that one. But I look. This country has had the same paranoia as every other country. The government jumped on board fully, and they locked everyone down, and they did exactly what everyone else was done. But unfortunately, again, the black dudes basically said, fuck you. I'm not going to wear a mask. They partied it up. Nobody wore masks and had massive parties, and especially with no masks. And those parts of the country didn't suffer any worse than those of in the white communities who are self-shaming and are shaming others into wearing their masks and behaving like a sheep. No change, no difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's something about being under the cosh that makes people kind of hardy. I would have thought that white South Africans would have been a bit hardier, but maybe not. But over here, it's pretty much been, I would say, maybe 99% compliance from the general population on every fucking level. So, you know, wear a mask in a shop. Don't leave your house. We had a 5-kilometer travel restriction that's just been lifted recently. Now we're being allowed to visit friends and family. So it's quite incredible. We don't have, or historically we haven't had a large black population. We have recently in the last maybe 10 years, probably 100,000 immigrants from Africa have come to Ireland. But I think our equivalent of the darkies, as you call them, you can't say darkies over here because it would be seen immediately as racist. But we have our traveling population, so they're gypsies. So they seem to be en masse saying to the government, fuck you, I'm not going to follow your ridiculous fucking rules. And what I found quite interesting was, again, just having a little look into the history of South Africa, that kind of back in the late 19th century, the British colonial government in South Africa, they resettled racial groups under the pretense of responding to epidemics in overcrowded neighborhoods. And it kind of gave me a bit of a giggle because of what's happening with the coronavirus at the moment. So, yeah, I know. Yeah. It seems like an old fucking trick. There's no plans afoot in South Africa to move vast swathes of the population into into new lands hiding somewhere, no?
Well, you know, we have been talking about the advent of the black power taking over the farmers, taking over the land, getting given everything. But the truth is, you cannot do that and survive as a country. Mm. You only need to look at Zimbabwe for that mm-hmm. very reason. And it fell apart in 2 years, completely fell apart with up to 1,000,000% interest rate over the years. And it was insane. But Robert Mugabe lost control of his Red Brigade. They were the Koreans and the Chinese that were there enforcing. And they were the Red Brigade because they wore red berets. And they ran the place with a steel rod. And I'm talking literally, they beat the shit out of people if they stepped 1 inch out of line. And the youth got involved with them as well. So they became subjugated to the Red Brigade. And the youth started to get uppity about these lovely, big, fat farms that were running beautifully and feeding everybody. And they decided they're going to start taking these farms from people. And there was a choice that Mugabe had to make eventually after a couple of years of this happening more and more often in 2000 and 2001 to say, I lose control of my country and my premiership, or I just say, fuck it, take the farmlands, just do it. I mean, how bad could it be? You're right. Yeah. And that's what happened. He lost control of the mob, as it were, but he just stuck to his guns. He stood 46 years. He was the prime minister, and you know the story. And you cannot upset and destroy the middle class, because the middle class is what keeps the banks going. And the banks, if you start taking land and $30 trillion suddenly just disappears off their books because nobody's paying back, I'm sorry, I can't pay you back my usual $10,000 a month because some other dudes are living there and I'm living somewhere else. I don't own the place. The banks won't deal with it. The structure of import export, the structure of the GDP being spent responsibly, the structure of the government dealing with everybody else in the world would just fall apart instantly. So they know they can't do that. This is all just bullshit and terror making and appeasing the masses. And there's a lot of fucking idiots that are in those masses, and they fall for it. So it's garnering and keeping their support.
On part of the bio I was reading about you, it described, I don't know if it's describing you or if you're self-described as a free man on the land. That kind of caught my interest because, one, I don't know if it's just that you're just a free man in and of the word itself and you live on the land, or if you were part of the free man on the land ideology and movement. But myself and Howard used to be involved in a forum here in Ireland that did pick up on that ideology. So can you talk to that?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I'm been a member for a long, long time of a group called the Cape of Good Hope, which is really what this whole Western thing is. And then they have been around for a long time with some extraordinary people behind it. And I did get involved for some time. But then again, I thought to myself, look, I'm 67. I've had a lot of shit in my life, and I've been an anarchist, and I've been involved in opposing the government, the police, and people for a long, long time. And I thought to myself, if you want to get into shit, then get yourself involved in this organization and stand up to authority. Tell them to fuck off and see how far that gets you. So I thought I need some younger people to get involved and do it and let me hide out. I don't involve myself with tax people. I don't involve myself with the government. I don't watch the news. I don't give a shit about anything out there. I take responsibility for myself and those around me. And nobody has to look after me. I look after myself, and everyone around me looks after us. So yes, in effect, I am still of that movement, being a free man on the land, being a free man. But I'm not going to be driving up and down with strange number plates telling the traffic cops to fuck off.
Yeah, it doesn't work very well, does it?
No. All of those guys that do it are in and out the can, and we were bailing people out. No.
Yeah, I can fully understand the sentiment. Like even like today when I'm faced with a cop, like just the adrenaline fucking pulses through my veins. I have to fight my instincts to pretend I'm a fucking decent, law abiding, loving citizen. But again, it's true experience. You know, it's just you like an argument with the state or agents of the state is a long, painful, arduous fucking event. And it usually ended up with me having to pay some sort of fine, appear in court, or go home with a very fucking bruised ego. And if I was particularly unlucky, the backs of my legs bruised and shoulder blades bruised as well, you know.
Yeah.
But to this day, in this country, there's still people of the belief that if they utter the right magical words, in the right order, that somehow they're going to escape the court system. Yeah. And it's good
all
to hear that
guns and the batons disappear magically. And
because my advice to anybody too would be, if you can, for the love of God, like, stay away from fucking all of them. If you can, if you do happen to end up in court, try and get out of there as quick as is humanly fucking possible, so you save yourself some real hassle, loss of money and potential loss of freedom. So that used to be the mantra. What I'm more worried about now is, given this whole fucking pandemic horseshit, is that people's homes have become their fucking prisons. Their places of work have become their house. Your gymnasium has become the house. Everything is centered around the house. And now it seems that the state has the ability to, you know, imprison people within their own homes. And I'm constantly kind of trying to balance, like you said, okay, should I just step out of this altogether? And like you said, just worry about myself and those closest to me? Or should there be some amount, some fucking sort of resistance? And in some small way, this is what this is part of. But I'm sure you know what I'm alluding to. But yes, my concern is that the machine itself, and Howard has said this to me as well, the machine is just too fucking big. And that any attempt, serious attempt to make a dent in that machine is a fool's errand, you know.
Keep the fuck away from a court. If you're being taken to court, you're down the chute. In this country, you're fucked. Do not even consider for a moment that you're going to get away with what some of those Americans get from saying, I'm a free man on the land. You don't have jurisdiction. Not a fucking chance here. They'll fucking cut you down. They'll throw you in the fucking slammer. They'll take your clothes away for 3 months. And then they'll say, you're ready to come back to court. And you're begging to go to court. But just bypass that shit. I'm too old for that shit. So that's all I'm saying is I leave it. To, you know, if I keep on thinking about Monty Python and the serfs and that one scene where the serf talks about communism and you, yeah. And I thought it was fantastic.
We didn't elect you. Who made you our king?
Exactly, you king. And that was fantastic to witness and feel that strength of that guy. But it's not going to get you anywhere most of the time any longer, because the rules have been squeezed tighter and tighter, and the entire globe has become their own wardens in their own prison, as you rightly say.
It's quite frightening, really. I'm just reminded that the last kind of run-in I had with a cop, maybe if anyone was listening, younger guys, the trick is probably not to make cops think they're stupid or not to show them up that they're stupid. He was asking me for ID. And I was being an asshole, you know, saying, what the fuck do you want ID for? Like, you know, he's saying, what's your name? And so, you know, I wouldn't give him my name. And then he's going like, you have ID? I said, oh, I have no ID. Like, I'm not giving you my ID. Why do you need my ID? And he goes, because I need to know you exist. I said, well, look, if I didn't if I didn't exist, I wouldn't be standing here in front of you. And it caused him pause to think. And then he felt like a dickhead. And then it was right. Okay, come on, into the back of the fucking car. And then straight to the police station, stole my fucking money, and kept me there for fucking 8 hours, and then released me. And then, of course, I went home going, oh, what a fucking dickhead am I? Why didn't I just keep my fucking mouth shut and just let it pass? But I think in the first flush of youth, I think you got to do that on some level. I couldn't imagine not doing it. I think I would have felt worse for it if I had just, you know, closed my mouth, been a good boy, and just went about my business. But it's a fine balance, like most things in life. It's a very fine fucking balance, you know. And I'm of the mind, that's why I want to go back to the being in the military. I think maybe if we had a kind of citizenship that was on an even keel, so if everybody had some sort of military training, if everybody had access to weapons, which we don't in this country, it's only violent criminals and state that has weapons now. So it's the two are intermingled. But the average citizen doesn't have weapons, doesn't have any sort of military training. So large portions of us are essentially handicapped to put up any sort of resistance to a state that turns tyrannical. So that would be my ideal. How we get there, I don't know. I don't know if it's a pipe dream, if it's a 50-year project, if it's a fucking never-ending project, or maybe it's just to make human life interesting, because it would be pretty fucking dull if everything just went according to plan.
You sound like George Carlin there.
All right, well, there's no real question in there other than my frustrations being etched onto your good self.
It's a big club and you ain't in it. Well, that big club is bearing down, but I have a hope in my heart that that they got no chance. People are already waking up about the bullshit of coronavirus. They're already waking up about the bullshit of taxes, and the entire carpet and curtain is being lifted and dropped and lifted and dropped. But more and more people, just taking the coronavirus, just a year ago, people were saying, I will refuse to wear a mask. So people would say to me, mask, mask, mask. And I'd say, no. And they didn't know how to deal with that because everyone would go, oh, sorry, and put their masks on. I'd just tell them to fuck off. And I would never, I will not wear a mask. I lie. I have worn a mask 3 times. And all 3 times was to the bottle store. And that was an important place. So I just put it on.
Yeah. You have to make your compromises at times.
There are, especially when the booze is involved. I can't go into that. What do you call a bottle store over there?
Off license.
A liquor store.
Oh, yeah.
Off license. All right, yeah, that's the only time I've worn masks is when the guy said, you can't come in. Yeah, and he was bigger than I. So I thought, fuck it. The beer, I can see the beer from here. So now, yeah. So I've kept away from it, and I don't go out. People say to me, "You've got to come to our house and wear a mask." Mm-hmm. I just stopped going out. In fact, I became my own prison guard.
Yeah, Joe, I've had family members, my 2 sisters in particular, who were terrified of this virus. But it could be anything. And I don't know about you, but it caught me off guard. Maybe for the last 15 years, I've been, these things happen and you go, oh, yeah, but that's part of some overarching plan where the totalitarian nightmare just increases step by step. But a lot of it, I kind of convinced myself, it's no real overarching plan for total domination of the human spirit. And then this fucking coronavirus came out of the blue. And it's like, holy fuck. Jesus Christ.
It works.
Yeah. I'm like, fucking hell. Like, this is unbelievable. Like, and I was shocked. And I thought it was like, maybe it's part of a simulation I'm involved in, you know? And that kind of struck me when everybody start hoarding fucking toilet roll. Of all things, like, I don't know if this happened in South Africa, but it happened in Ireland. Where, so January hits and then it's just full scale fucking panic for your life from every news outlet simultaneously, mind you. So there has some level of fucking planning. And then everybody and their fucking wife makes a hotline for fucking Tesco's or local supermarket.
Can I interject here? Why are you putting people down for being wise? I've been telling.
I'm not.
It just comes with the insinuation. Oh, those silly plebs, those silly sheep buying all the toilet paper. I've been telling people for years, this is going to be worth more than gold when shit hits the fan. Stock up bit by bit. You know, you build your pantry up over the years. I have shit tons of stuff up in my attic, right? I'm waiting. That shit will get you food, sex, clean water.
But did it? How much sex did you get for all of your toilet roll hoarding? How much sex did it get you? How many blowjobs did you get for one roll of toilet
saturated.
No, I hear you. It's what. Let me step back a little bit. It's very wise to be prepared on all levels, especially on the shit level. Okay, it's wise to have some form of paper to wipe your ass in the event that it becomes scarce and rare. What shocked me was that was the go-to item. So not food. It was like, I just saw people go into the store and make a beeline straight for the fucking toilet roll. Now, I don't know if maybe they couldn't think outside of, well, what happens if there's no toilet roll? But I was led to believe that you could use water and some sort of rag. That would suffice, but there would be no need to make a bulk purchase.
And you're not going to shit if you don't have food.
But it panicked me, right? And the reason it panicked me, because it made me realize how fucking unprepared I was. Because for all the will and the rationale in the world, I found myself buying fucking extra toilet roll too. Because as much as you like to think you're removed from the fucking herd, you're not. So I found myself, you know, buying extra toilet roll, running around to fucking Chinese food stores, bulking up on items because everyone else was in fucking Tesco's and the major store. So I goes, well, you know, everybody's going to be at the major stores. So I'll go to kind of the alternative places where not many people will be. But it caught me out because I was completely fucking unprepared. And then it made, again, I was living in the city at the time and it made me realize, well, you know, I don't have land. And if something drastic was to happen, I would essentially be fucked. I would starve within a matter of weeks. You know, I can't look after myself in the real sense of the word. You know, I've no animals, I've no husbandry skills. I have some herbs growing on the windowsill. But I'm fucked. And that's the majority of people. We're fucked. We don't know how to survive.
And but you had the bog roll.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know how many legs of lamb that's going to get me. But we're all fucked. Large sections of us, especially city dwellers, we don't have a clue. We're massively fucking dependent on the state and all its institutions. And we're not aware of it at all. So I commend you for fucking living in the sticks. I assume you live in the sticks. You have a farm. So that's great. And I think that's the ideal for a lot of people. And it was the ideal for me when I was much younger, but I had no real clue about the daily grind of working on a farm. I'm sure it's not as idealistic as I would like to think it is of, you know, getting up and the birds are singing and, you know, I'm not like I'm muscular. My back is fucked from inactivity. So I don't know how well I would do on on an actual farm, you know. So how's the farming life? Is it all it's made out to be? Or is there some level of satisfaction in knowing like that? Like in the true sense of the world, I suppose you are a free man on the land because you are free. You don't have to depend on all those things that us fucking city dwellers would, you know?
No, not well. You know, we don't have, you know, many animals. It's not that kind of a farm.
Okay.
Dope.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Well, that's something I did grow. So now we have something in common. We're not on the right latitude here to grow it outdoors, but I had an indoor farm. So I guess in some sense, I am an indoor farmer.
Exactly. Oh, you could get away with it.
Yeah. That's
a couple wonderful. Of lights. Big attic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some tents, like I had, you know, some high pressure sodium lights and taking clones and that kind of stuff. That's great. Like, so, and do you farm, is it sativas or indicas or a mix, or?
Cause we used to get largely Durban. Indicas.
All right, cool. Yeah. We used to get Durban poison over here.
Yes.
Beautiful.
The good old days.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I used to just grow a mix of kind of F1 hybrids, but mostly indica heavy. The sativa fucked with my mind something terrible, as you could probably tell by our conversation. It's had its effect.
Well, yeah, the sativa is most popular in this country because of that very reason. So, yeah.
Yeah, I found it a strange one, right? Because of all the drugs there are, or I should say of all the drugs I've taken, which are quite a few in the past, there's just none like marijuana. I said this to Howard before. It actually, I think there's some sort of goddess within that plant because it put me to work for it, you know? So I started off just smoking it as a teenager. Then by the time I got to my mid-20s, I knew everything about it.
Yeah.
I was cultivating it. I was singing its praises. Propagandizing for it. I was trying to have it legalized.
Yeah.
And then the bitch dumped me. She just almost drove me insane from fucking spending too much time with it. And I've never experienced anything like it. And I'm not alone. Like, there's a whole fucking culture behind it. You know, music, like a religion. It's incredible. It's absolutely fucking incredible. And it's, I don't know, is it legal in South Africa?
It is.
All right. Oh, good.
It is. Yeah. It's about a year and a half ago, it became legal. So everybody's got on the act. You can only own so much and grow so much, but I ignore them. They ignore me. So,
That's good. And what way does it work over there? So do you have to, theoretically, do you have to get licensed to grow it? And is it like the States?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Same bullshit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you want to grow anything more than, I think it's 30 plants, you need to get a license.
Yeah. Because I remember having...
sell it. You can't keep it. You can't transport it. There's a whole lot of rules. Yeah, it's the same thing as everything. There's nothing that is legal in this world. Everything is illegal until you pay a license and then it becomes legal.
Yeah, exactly. I remember having conversations years ago on the pros and cons of legalization versus decriminalization. I was on the wrong end of that one. I thought it would make perfect sense to have it legalized, but no. I think decriminalization would have probably been the better option. It seems a shame to waste a man's life to send him to prison for the act of growing a plant.
Or taking any drug for that. I mean, I was looking at 12 to 18 years in Canada for selling the Royal Canadian Mounted Police 3 Ooh. Kilograms of cocaine. And I was 22 years old. They were going to lock me up. 12 to 18 years was going to be my sentence.
Wow. Fucking hell.
So that's what I mean. I was just helping a few friends out and it got out
as
of hand.
As it does.
So as it does. Yeah. So that's what you talk about. Your whole life changes because somebody said that's rule number 642B. Of the distribution, your life is history.
Yeah, that's it. It's and the blink of a fucking eye as well. Like it's incredibly. I even remember talking about Canada. Mark Emery. I don't know if you're aware of Mark Emery, the kind of
yes, of course.
Yeah. And the guys in the States, the DEA came for him like and 5 fucking years, you know, for selling seeds. Like that's the mind fucking boggles. Like. And it always gets me because the majority of people I know would have no issue with that. It's like, oh well, you know, he broke the law, so therefore he should be punished. Yet when you put it to them, well, are you okay with me coming into your fucking house, taking you out of the house because you've somehow offended me, and then I get to stick you in a box for 10 years because you've offended my sensibilities? And then all of a sudden it's oh well, no, that's quite bizarre, but they can't seem to make the jump.
You've got reasonable friends, it sounds like. And those days that probably up until 2000, you would get 15 years in jail here for owning as much as or as little as a matchbox full.
Jesus Christ.
15 years they could have thrown you in the tank.
Okay, wow. What way is it sold over there? Is it mostly just in herbal form or is hashish a thing over in your neck of the woods?
It's mainly just the grass. I mean, they sell it in what they call an arm.
Okay.
An arm is exactly what it sounds like it is. It's from your wrist to your elbow.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah, so probably about 7 ounces, still 8, on 10 the ounces ranch. Maybe. You're sometimes it's they're just there's a big mishmash of people who smoke absolute shit to those that are buying only Kush, and so there's that mixture of people here, but largely people just smoke what they call majat here, which is just fucking anything that looks like dope.
All right, yeah. No, I used to love Hindu Kush was my favorite plant to grow, just a pure indica. I'm getting nostalgic thinking about it.
I've got about 180 of them right now.
Oh, fuck. So what I used to do was I would, I got very deep into it. So I would only harvest. I'd have a look at the trichromes, the glandular trichromes under the microscope. Yeah. And when they got kind of that mix between cloudy and amber, I would chop it down. And then the kind of 8 week wait for it to dry properly, but I enjoyed it. And the terpenes, the aromas, man, I could just happily sit there, and just with my nose in a big pile of weed for a week, I wouldn't even have to smoke it. I think I have to start. I think you've convinced me. I think I've found my calling.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or your fingertips just pick up any dust or anything you've touched.
Oh yeah.
It picks up your fingers. You can't clean that shit off.
Oh, it's a swine. Yeah. It's a fucking swine.
What are we doing to each other here?
Okay. Yeah, but it
oh my God.
I don't know. I gave it up. I have to give it up. My subconscious was I think the weed gave me up. I think it sent me a message. It said, okay, dummy, haven't we been through these fucking introspective nightmares enough? It's time for you to leave. And I think the spirit of marijuana left me. It dumped me. So that's my story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marijuana gave me up.
Yeah.
Rather yeah. than the other way around.
I like that. I like that. I also gave it up. I became paranoid. I used to become paranoid when I was down to about 10 ounces, and now I've got paranoid if I see 10. You know.
it's a wonderful drug. Patrick, on a personal front, are you a married man at all, or do you have children?
Yeah, unlike you guys, I had one and said, fuck that, never again.
Wife or child?
Child. She's sitting right here.
All right.
She's listening to everyone.
Hello, Mrs. Patrick.
So I've got to be very cool. I can't say no. She's fabulous. And she's a lovely woman. And So now I had one child and I gave it a miss. That was just no, too much effort.
Yeah, I convinced myself that I was never going to have any, and I ended up with six fucking children.
Whoa! Jesus, no wonder you're working three jobs.
Whoa. Yeah, who are you fucking telling? Jesus. Yeah, six kids and from two different women. It's
full life.
That's what I have to tell myself.
It's a full there life. Yeah, many exactly. ways of word.
Yeah.
You see, that's the African way, your way of speaking a little earlier on, and that is that you have as many kids as you can whilst you still can.
Yeah.
And then one day when you can't walk anymore, or you can't do whatever you need to do, the kids are going to send you dough. Mm. That actually works rather well in large tracts of Africa. I mean, guys come down here from Malawi and they work in the gardens. Some of them have been educated. They work in the gardens for a pittance and they send 2/3 of their dough back. Mm. Live in a shithole. But it's the Zulu way specifically, the Xhosa way. Have as many kids as you can and then you're looked after as you get older.
Yeah, it's the Chinese way as well. For me, in honesty, I'll be honest. So the first, Jesus, I hope my children don't listen to this podcast or find it at some stage in the future.
Yes.
My first child, much as I love her, much as I love you, darling. Complete accident. I was fucking shocked, abhorred. Couldn't believe it. It's like, holy fucking Jesus Christ, now I have to grow up. Fuck. Are you sure? Is it mine? That's never, if anyone's listening, that's not something you want to utter when your partner tells you they're pregnant. Is it my child? Are you sure it's my fucking child? Like, let's not be hasty here. So that happened. I actually found the experience wonderful. Like it was very fulfilling, you know, to watch a child being born, to bond with it, to learn to love on that level. It's completely different than, you know, love for a brother or a sister, mother, partner, father, whatever. So that was fantastic. Then that relationship died on its arse. Then I got back with the same woman again and then had another child. It's like, what the fuck? Why did I do that? So I got my ass kicked on that. And then maybe 5 years passed and I fell in love with a younger woman, maybe 14 years younger than me. And so with her being much younger, she wanted to have a family. And so then we had three children in 3 years. So I now have a nice spread of kind of 12, 10, 6, 3, 2, and 1. So I'm fogged. Like, so I'm going to be like, I'm going to be in mid 80s when they finally get to send me some money home. Just enough to cover the funeral costs, you know.
Oh, God. Oh, my. Jeez. Yeah.
That's what I do this for. This is therapy for me, Patrick. So I am not, thank you for coming on, and I'm portioning a part of my burden to everybody we come in contact with, so it makes it easier for me in the long run.
Well, I had the opposite experience with having a child, and so I regularly tell him to fuck off and never come back again, but he keeps on coming back. I don't know.
How old is he?
28.
It's a rough one. I think childhood has been extended into the mid-30s. For people, especially in this country, nobody can afford fucking anything. I think just to get your foot on the ladder here, if you want to simply own a house, not even own a house, if you want to mortgage, if you want the privilege of getting yourself into debt for 35 years, and you probably need to be earning independently, maybe 100 grand a year, or if you're lucky enough to partner up with somebody, maybe 50 or 60 grand a year before they'll consider you. And what we have at the minute is there's kind of venture capitalist groups and large industries just buying up any houses that come on the market, and then they're renting them out at exorbitant prices. So it's almost impossible for people to get any sort of foot on the ladder. And probably the way it will end up here, much like large parts of Europe, is that you're not going to own your property. You are going to have to rent for the majority of your life, either be that from the state or from some private equity group, which is kind of fucking tragic.
It's the way of everything. Mm. It's the way that we're already being run by corporations. So, if you're going to fucking go, you may as well go all the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's up to us to fight it in our own small way, whatever we consider to be a way, is to get around it some way, make people aware at least that they're not just sheep, that they can do something. Mm-hmm. And as you say, if things were perfect every single day, I'd fucking kill myself.
Yeah, true. It's what was the point?
Adversity.
And I know from looking at your YouTube videos and the comments from people who listen to your material, you've made a massive impact. And that, I think on some level, that's what we want to do is make some sort of impact and some little contribution to, I hate to say it, but waking people up, because I don't really know what that means. Yeah. Honestly, I don't know what it means. I don't know if I'm inviting somebody else to my nightmare or, but beyond that, there is a level where people need to realize, look, everything is not as it fucking is. Just ask some questions, you know, be honest. Are you happy with the world you live in? Is it really okay for you to have to, you know, wear a fucking mask when you go into a shop where you can't leave your house if a government tells you to? So I want to thank you for your work, the content, your voice. There's something about your voice. It's just magical. Like there's a light to it. And I'm deadly serious. Most people we interview on here, there's a light that emanates, well, at least for me, there's a light that emanates from the people I want to talk to. And I felt that light from you, and it comes through your voice. And I know you say that, you know, oh, well, if anybody paid you, you would do that voice. But maybe it's me, but I feel it. Like when I listen to your voice, like there's magic in it. There's a realness about it. I can't think of any other way to describe it. Just as magical, like it brings the words to life. I get a physical sensation when I listen to your voice, and it amplifies the words that you read and the journalists that you're reading from as well. It's just fucking magical. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. I know your fans have missed you. And I don't know if you plan to do stuff in the future. It's got fuck all to do with me, and I'm not going to ask you to. But personally, I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for the work you've put out there. I think it's been fantastic. So thank you, Patrick, for that.
That's very cool of you. Thank you. But it is also something I love doing, as opposed to something I do to put a buck in my pocket. I love doing it. And I was very lucky enough to see David Akia in 2000 year 1999, I think it was. He came over here and he did a week in a little place in Johannesburg, south of Johannesburg. And I remember him saying he was selling what there's something to do with the secret. Oh, God, I can't remember what the book was called. His first book he made, the biggest, it doesn't matter. His book that he's most famous for, he was flogging that and he was flogging the concept. And he stood us all, 35 of us, however many were there, and he said, from now on to the day I walk out of here, your life is going to change. Your life will never be the same again. And I thought, Oh, fuck. Yeah, right. I've heard this once or twice in my life before. And it did make a massive difference. I started seeing things differently. And I based my choices to do this kind of stuff on that experience, that one guy could come here to South Africa and wake a whole shitload of people up, and they woke other people up. And again, we're using that word again, but it's the truth of what happens. One guy can make a difference. Mm. So I did it with that in mind. I did it with the fact that one guy turned a group of us into fucking groupies back then.
Yeah.
The Truth Shall Set You Free was his book.
That's the one.
All right. So I know there's, but what I found with the whole waking up things is that there's levels to it. So there seems to be people like David Icke and Alex Jones. I can't think what's the other guy's name. Bill Cooper. There seems to be these guys, and they wake you up. But what I found is over the years, I've probably woken up four or five different fucking times.
Yes.
So
yes,
I'm not sure if it's a recurring nightmare. Yeah. Or if there is where the final, I'm not sure if the final waking up is when you finally fucking fall asleep, you know? So I don't know, but there seems to be a certain path. And part of me, the conspiratorial part of me thinks, well, maybe this is put in train anyway. So you have to follow these certain paths. But I think that's life anyway, isn't it? You go through life, you learn as many lessons as you can. You try to pass your wisdom on as best you can. You talk to other people to see what they've learned and what you can learn from them. You get your ego bruised, you learn, you moved on, you pass the knowledge on and so on until you finally get a pass to get the fuck off this planet once and for all. Or not, you know.
It's a bit of a morbid note. I wasn't thinking about it exactly like that.
Sorry, that's me, Patrick. I at the end of everything, I always go a little bit dark. And then I catch myself on and go, oh, yeah, well, you know, we'll lighten things up again. But yeah, I can't help it. It's part of being Irish. We have a certain level of morbidity about us. I think it's because historically we're so used to fucking death and tragedy.
Yeah,
that we're very comfortable with it, and we tend to joke around about it. But at the back of it belies, like everyone else, a fear of the great unknown. You know.
Well, yeah. I think that the long and the short of this whole thing is, if you're comfortable with yourself, and you push your boundaries, you cannot possibly go to that deathbed and go, I wish I'd spent more time working. I wish I'd spent less time having a good time. And this is what I'm doing now, is getting away from everything, all of this bullshit. And I very rarely that's why I've stopped largely doing this stuff, because I'd still want to go poring over everyone's stuff and having to do this shit. I got a hell of a lot of trouble at one stage because I was nailing Israel.
Oh yeah,
I had people coming out the fucking woodwork threatening my life, and that was the wrong thing to do. I just went madder at the time, and that's when I got thrown off of YouTube. I'm very much of a "what do you mean fuck me" kind of dude. So there were some serious threats. People who figured out where I lived. But I was prepared, but not prepared for the kind of vitriol that came out of thousands of people trying to take me out, take me down, fuck my work up, fuck my life up. It was pretty hardcore for a while. But yes, and nobody understood that I wasn't being anti-Semitic. Uh-huh. I was being anti-Israel, but you can't do that. You can't do that.
Oh yeah, it's forbidden almost completely. I'm not familiar with a lot of that stuff, so I can't really talk about it. I don't know what was or wasn't said, but what I do know is you can't mention anything in any kind of negative light about Israel at all. You shut down immediately. So what happened exactly? Was it like an organized campaign, like a smear campaign, or did they?
Yeah, at various work fronts, and you know, as a voice artist, your world is small and narrow. Mm-hmm. It's not as if you can go, well, fuck you, I'll go to somewhere else. You can't. Yep. A contract is a contract. So I do say rugby, super sport for twice or three times, four times a week. And if they had have got through there, there's a chance I could have lost the job. And it was pointless. It was pointless arguing with these people, and it was pointless stopping. So I just carried on until they stopped. And then I was stopped by YouTube. So YouTube just shut me down, shut the whole shop. They didn't even tell me fuck off. They just shut me down.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose we've seen that with a lot of people. It's kind of trial by public. And again, irrespective of what was said or what wasn't said, just the mere association with something can have you shut down. So yeah, it's quite frightening, really. And so why you said it was this kind of concerted effort against you. Do you think it's particular groups or just like Israelis or...
Well, there's obviously the Sayanim that work via different formats. They target somebody. I'm pretty much got an open profile, or I had an open profile on the net, so I wasn't impossible to find.
Okay.
And so, and especially with somebody with the resources to do so. Uh-huh. So it just started coming through. There were people that in studios that said, by the way, we believe that you're anti-Semitic. Oh. No, fuck off, I'm not. Mm. You know, but you can't explain. If somebody doesn't like what you say and they have access to private information, they can make things difficult for one.
Oh, yeah. It's a good reason why we do this somewhat anonymously as well. And we're not doing much anyway, but that's the world we live in now. That even to have any sort of differing view from the norm, you have to protect your fucking self.
So I actually received a warning shot over my head from these Israeli types a few years ago, circa 2017, openly on Twitter. I was doxxed by just some seemingly random stranger. Just lucky for me that the information that they leaked out there was maybe a few years out of date. I was living in a completely different town, but it was very unnerving to see that there was that like concerted effort over a guy with, you know, a kind of little tiny channel just on YouTube, maybe 100, 150 views. And it, you know, calls for doxing. So these people mean business. They're one of the more vicious varieties out there.
Yeah. Well, there's the whole world is waking up and they're dying at the same time. I know that sounds like stupid to say, but we are getting the sheeple coming out the yanks. I mean, there were times when I think we all thought America was the greatest country in the world. Look what they had, Elvis Presley right through to everybody. And now we think they're fucking idiots. Mm-hmm. And so the world, that wheel turns. And I think the wheel's turning against against the despots and those people that have assisted the Yanks to take over, to have 121 countries where they have a military to where they've started 75% of all the bloody wars in the past 125 years, where they have say over financial institutions, where they can rip people to shreds on the stock market, where they can, there's always seems to be an aggression coming out of the American camp. And it's turned into a shit show. America has. I mean, I look at them now and there's not a fucking chance I'd go back there.
No, I've never been. I've never really wanted to go. My wife is American. She's lived here for the last 10 years. But I had a thought there, Patrick. Maybe we should all convert to fucking Judaism. So we're immune from we're immune from criticism. it might do the job. So personally, I think I'll convert to Judaism. I will become a transsexual, so I'm free from criticism on that front. So I'll transition to a female, and
pigment therapy.
Yeah, exactly. So I may change my race from Caucasian to African. So then I'll be free from all criticism, and I'll a lesbian as well. So if I do transition from male to female, I would have to be a lesbian, so I would still like women. But that's how convoluted our fucking world is. It's quite insane. Yeah.
Well, as they say, I'm at the stage now where I love that Monty Python line: "I laugh in their general direction." fuck it. I don't want to be involved any longer, which is why, coming full circle, I've basically given up the helm and just occasionally do some boring shit.
Okay. No, I don't. I think you've earned your retirement.
Yep.
Patrick. I know you had a little bit of an issue. One of your houses or your house caught on fire. Was that right?
Burnt the thing down. The whole thing. We just escaped from that place. We ran for the car and just got out, and the entire town caught alive. Massive.
Ooh.
And everything that we ever had, all my work, all everything disappeared.
Fucking how long ago was that?
Oh, 2017, 7th of June.
Wow. Jesus Christ. So just as you're settled, like, you know,
yeah,
for fucking, what was it, a bushfire? Was it that got out of control? Or
Yeah, it went up about, probably around about 200 miles. This thing just raged right through the coastlines, towns. It was horrendous. It was massive. Flames 200 feet up in the, it was just one of those California nightmares.
I can't fathom it.
Land management is important.
Yeah,
but you know what? It had a cleansing effect on us, though. Eventually, eventually, I could say I was grateful to that fire. My life changed for the better. We got rid of all the shit that I've been wanting to get rid of for a long time.
That's a way to do it.
Yeah, there's no going back on that. It's not like rain damage. It's fucking gone. So we were both very grateful to that fire. It changed our lives for the better. And we ended up on the farm. We ended up, I surf regularly, and we moved to the best surfing beach. I should say arguably the best surfing beach in the world, up to Jeffreys Bay. And we were there for a couple of years, and then we came back to this area and changed our lives completely. It was fantastic.
Wow. Great that you can turn that around into something positive. I don't think there's much choice, really, is there? What's the alternative? You fucking sink into a depression.
None. There's none.
No, there isn't. You just got to, like, okay, well, let's turn this into a fucking positive. I think it's a metaphor for life, really. You know, you just take this shit, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and turn it into something positive.
It was, yeah, it was. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Howard, have you got any questions you'd like to ask?
Yeah, covered. Well, I don't know. It's thought was a question at some point, but I think Patrick really kind of covered his personal approach to things. You say, Patrick, that in one of your videos that you're just, you know, saying goodbye to it, you know, come back to me when you have a plan. There seems to be in the awakened communities a lot of different opinions. It's the Jews responsible, it's the Jesuits responsible, it's the Illuminati, there's the Freeman and Land people. It's the state, it's capitalism, it's communism, cultural Marxism. You know, find any 100. And yeah, they probably have the same kind of root of grievances, but there are so many different enemies, and you have this fragmented world population because of it. Do you see that kind of consolidating and becoming more realistic?
Well, I think what drove that piece was that largely that suddenly everyone bought themselves a cheap microphone and they're telling you what the fuck's going on out there. And it just got to the point where, come on, guys, fucking hell, do something about it. Don't tell what everybody's... That was really all. It was an innocent fuck off. This is boring now. That was really what it was. Just right. Just stand up and do something about it yourself. You sound... It's when you're reading stuff like Les Visibles, who's such a master at innuendo, he's an extremely adept at the English language, and he's able to couch metaphors behind metaphors, and he's able to bring the language to life. But when you've got some dickhead who's going, that fucking, it all started with Nixon and that motherfucker and the gold standard, and I think, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Who's he talking to? And then thousands of them came out. I was being inundated. I just stopped watching that shit. And I thought, you know, you're muddying the water, guys. Just leave it to a few people who care and who are not trying to get hits on YouTube. And so that's really what motivated that whole story. And it is. And I'm ready to do my bit. And I have been doing my bit. And I do my bit on the quiet. I do my bit and I avoid the fucking man. That's really what I do. I avoid the man completely. And it's my way of fighting back, my small thing. I've taken none of my monies in the bank. My money's in silver, my money's in gold, my money's in nothing that the government can touch. I don't touch any government institution. I don't rely on retirement funds, and I completely ignore the fuckers, completely. I do not truck with them in any way or shape or form. So that is my way of doing my tiny little drop in the ocean against the system, is to extricate myself from it.
That's the most powerful way.
For me, it is, yeah.
Yeah, I think for everybody, really, if everybody could do it, that's the end of the fucking state. But everybody can't. And I think that's part of the lesson as well, that really most people can do, is to focus on their own fucking life first.
Yes.
And then worry about preaching to everybody else. And I think we're all guilty of it. Oh, I fucking am anyway. but you know, until your own house is in order, you probably have no real truck to get up and tell other people how to fucking live their lives and what they should and shouldn't be doing. Be it from whatever angle you're coming from, if you're a, you know, communist or the right winger or whatever flavor you would like to choose from. I think essentially it boils down to, okay, well, what are you doing yourself? And I think there's all things that we're doing individually, and there's, at least for me anyway, there's 1,000 things I'm not doing that I should be doing. And we should probably talk about that. What is it we're doing individually? What more could we be doing individually? And then when we maybe get a group of 10 or 15 people who have their shit together, actually have their shit together, well, then we might stand some chance of doing something outside of ourselves, you know?
Well, that's a wonderful question that you ask, that I have tended to ask people, is that they go, there's big shit here. You'll never believe the government, the Illuminati, as you just said. What's your solution? What is your solution? Mm. And that's what you get, silence. Well, my solution is like, fuck the man. And yeah, right. Okay, what is it? Just tell us, what is your solution? That's to anybody. Anybody, you want to talk about the black guys here? They've got a beef about the white farmers or the some fucking hidden Japanese soldier that they found the other day on Tutankhamun Island. Every single human being, have you got a solution? Ask that question. Ask yourself that question. And if you can answer that question, then that's your solution. And you take it. You're taking a small step. That if everybody did, or not everybody, 10% of the world did their own solution, we would see some changes.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. And then the great thing, of course, with change is it's a universal, so everything's going to fucking change anyway. not a lot we can do about that, but change for the better. I think that's what we're all about. Again, every time I think there's a problem with that as well. My version of better is not necessarily somebody else's version of better either. So I think maybe it would be ideal if people wanted to live a particular way. If people were true to their word and were actually tolerant about other people. Well, if there was a group of people who wanted to extricate themselves from the state, such as your good self, that some sort of simple contract could be drawn up where it says, okay, I leave you alone. You leave me alone. Let's shake hands and just fucking call it a day. It's like trying to get out of a bad relationship, really.
Yeah.
One party doesn't want you to leave. Yeah. It's like, please, Patrick, please. You know, we've been together for 67 years. Why?
Why now?
Why end it now?
Oh God. It's a mess, and the world seems to be going to extremes that are. I'm gobsmacked at this. The Black Lives Matter movement has gained so much traction, for instance, and there are thousands of these different movements. And as you say, change your name, become a woman, become a lesbian, and you're safe. And if not, there's a nice little dog in that room. You can go to your safe room, and you'll be fine. And that kind of environment that they think this is helping. Or do the who's they? I don't know. It's just it becomes so fucking confusing that I bamboozle myself and I think, fuck it, I'm moving to the farm and I'm just keeping away from everybody.
Yeah, I think the likes of the Black Lives Matter movement, I think for people who are on board with it, if they think they're going to get reparations out of it, it would make perfect sense. It's essentially a big opportunity for somebody. Okay, well, look here, I can get fucking X amount of money. Simply because of the color of my skin, you know. So, yeah, I'm on fucking board with it. I've no real prospects in life. I've been born into a shitty family. The most I can probably expect is a job at McDonald's before they actually automize the whole fucking system. So that's it. So they've got nothing to fucking lose. Absolutely nothing to lose at all. And then we have a kind of white, or not even white, but a kind of middle-class liberal who's crippled with guilt, and I think who's been essentially made feel guilty because of their success. And whatever about the historical reasons why that happened, it's got fuck all really to do with the generation alive today. I don't feel responsible for whatever my ancestors fucking four or five generations removed did. It's got fuck all to do with me. All I can really answer for is what I do today. And what I've done, and if I've aggrieved anybody, it's to, you know, make amends for that grievance. But I'm not beholden to, you know, some fucking I just put myself in the shoes of an American white liberal. I don't owe any inner city black guy fuck all for something my ancestors may have done. And probably most of the guys who are up in arms or raising a fuss probably have no connection to fucking slavery at all. Their ancestors may not have been slaves at all. And my bigger question is, why does slavery start in the United States? It's not like that's where it began. You know, the fucking human culture is a history of slavery. Oh, yeah. And it hasn't ended either. And it's, you know, it's mutated. The vast majority of people are wage fucking slaves. Granted, it's not as brutal.
Manacles of gold.
Yeah, perhaps. But there is. I think it's how people have been educated and indoctrinated. That it's much easier to say, okay, well, you know what? My life is a piece of shit because of something that happened in the 1700s to an ancestor who may or may not have actually existed. And because that's easy. But then for that guy who comes from an inner city background to actually think and go, do you know what? Listen, I've got dealt a pretty fucking shitty hand here. Everything is against me. But fuck them. I'm going to prove a point to these fuckers and myself that, you know, I'm going to start small, build on my career, get some money, buy a piece of land and take it from there. And I think that's what we need. And I know in the States for that community, there's a lack of male role models. There's a lack of fathers. It's the same here in Ireland. And I think men in general, we don't have that kind of strong camaraderie that we used to have, which I think, I'm not sure, but I imagine would be found in the likes of military units. You have that level of camaraderie and community, and I think that's sadly missing.
And a sense of honor. So, a sense of honor is no more.
Yeah, and again, I think, and this is very unpopular, but I think if you grow up in a household where there is no man present, and it's only a woman, and it's not to denigrate women, but women and men, they're different beasts altogether. So if you grow up in a household of women and you see how women act around men, and that's your role model. So the women in my life, if they're having an argument with men, they could get away with bloody fucking murder because the man's not going to strike them. If it's a bunch of men, you know, if somebody starts acting the bollocks around you and gets in your face, 9 out of 10 men, you know, you're going to strike the fucker. And then if you're a young kid watching that, you realize, okay, well, listen, if I act out of turn, there is a consequence, a real fucking physical consequence for this. So then there's a section of society that grows up and thinks that, okay, well, you can act in this particular manner. You can fucking run amok and there's no consequence for it. There just is no consequence for it at all. I think this is a big problem in the States. It's a big problem in Ireland. But again, outside of what you could do on an individual level, other than fucking talk about it, expose it. Again, I don't want to start getting into the roles of then somebody who's in government. Okay, but what we need is a program to fucking bring the young children of the world up to scratch and introduce programs in schools and all that.
Doesn't work anyway.
No, but I think at least it needs to be talked about, fucking recognized, and then for men individually to go, okay, well, you know what? Okay, maybe I do have responsibilities of a man, as a man. Maybe I shouldn't fuck every second woman who walks down the street, get her pregnant, and then fuck off and forget about her, you know? Maybe, just a talk.
Jesus, that sounds fantastic.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So I don't know. I only have children with two women. I have no miscellaneous children out there. I have it's common knowledge. I've had a vasectomy, so I've sterilized myself. So I'm no longer a danger to society other than my genes that will carry on after me, you know, to wreak havoc on the fucking other poor souls.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, yeah, life is good.
Yeah, it's very good. So, in closing, I think maybe it's like that whole New World Order mandate that we do need to reduce the population of the planet. But as long as we get to remain, as long as we're on the ark, we're okay, you know.
You mean as long as you get to choose who fucking dies and who lives, yes.
Yeah, of course, like everyone would be on board with that. It's only if you're on the other end of the Nazi uniform, you know. Do you get to wear the Nazi uniform or do you get to wear the Jews uniform, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or you have the third option. You've chosen the middle road, which is to remove yourself from all the shit completely, bar talking to us crazy Irish fuckers. other than that, I think you've pretty much got it figured out.
Oh, God. Well, gentlemen, this has been something else. Thank you very, very kindly for having me aboard. I've never done one of these before, so I didn't prepare anything, or I just thought I'd just go with the flow. Ah, good.
You're in very good company. I think you're a man after our own hearts.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
We prepare as much as we can, but we much prefer to just fucking just go with the flow.
Fabulous.
See if we can connect on some human level. So thank you for your time. Thank you for doing this. You've no obligation to us at all.
Great pleasure.
So I appreciate it greatly.
Great. Too. It was great fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If at some stage, if you feel comfortable sharing a post office box or something like that, pop it along to us. I'd like to send you a bottle of whiskey or something in the post if you accept it. If not, don't worry about it.
Cool. Thank you.
Nice.
Alrighty. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Very cool. All right.
Thank you, Patrick.
We're speaking on.
Tot ziens,
meneer. Alrighty. Cheers, then.
All right.
Take care. You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.